This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
All righty, welcome to episode 13 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and this week we have Oakland A's broadcaster and reporter Jessica Kleinschmidt joining us. She also happens to be my colleague at Comeback Media, writing and podcasting for Awful Announcing and the Comeback, so we get to talk some baseball and cross promote our work, which is awesome. Jessica, thanks so much for joining us today. And I have to start with the one question that I think is a must ask for any A's broadcaster, and that is, have you met the Oakland Coliseum possum?
Not yet. I don't even know if I've ever actually seen the possum.
Oh wow, really?
In person.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but so we're not quite there yet. We're taking things slow, which I appreciate. You know, I'm a lady at the end of the day. But no, we haven't officially met. So hopefully never. But you know,
do you get the sense in like talking to people, is the conversation around the stadium that the possum is more of the menace that Mets broadcaster Gary Cohen ranted about, or is it the nice little animal that Yankees broadcaster Susan Waldman described?
I'm a Susan Waldman stan, so I will always listen to what she has to say. But we're talking years ago, might have been a different possum, but these possums have actually been a rally cry for the A's in the past. So that's the mentality and the relationship that I like to stick to when it comes to the possum. We're talking the years where the A's were very scrappy, coming out, you know, seventh, eighth, and ninth innings and tapping on some runs, and you know, Brandon Moss and Josh Reddick manning the outfield and those types of years. So that's the mentality, and that's the possum that I've grown to love. And you know, when it comes to it, like, you know, it just is what it is. But that's the possum I fell in love with years ago.
How is the Oakland Coliseum? I've never been there. Most headlines do not make it seem like a very appealing place to visit. Obviously, the possum has gotten a lot of attention, but I think there's been cats, there's been insect infestation, like broken seats, plumbing leaks. How is it working at the Oakland Coliseum?
It's the place I fell in love with baseball, so I personally love it. And you know, I'm also from Reno, where we love a good dive bar, and Oakland is considered the last dive bar. You have to remember, this place holds so much history. And yeah, cats happen a lot. Cats were at Busch Stadium. Cats happen everywhere. These things happen. And yeah, definitely, I feel like there's some things that break and they want to get taken care of. But you know, it's an updated clubhouse. I spent a lot of my time there, of course. It's now the former Raiders clubhouse that the A's players use there. And you know, a lot of people who talk, pardon my French, shit about the Coliseum have never been there. And it's probably some of the best memories I've personally had, both as a fan and as a reporter. I cover a lot of former players who, you know, Trevor May, who's now one of the relievers. He started his career, his actual major league debut was at the Coliseum. You know, these guys who spend years in the minors get their debut and they get to play in front of the fans who have followed them since their infancy in single and double A and everything like that. And, you know, I mean, maybe it's just because it's what I was raised around. I feel like it's definitely special and important to the sport. Fenway Park is just as old, you know, the friendly confines at Wrigley, old. And of course there's updates that need to be done, but I think that's every single spot. It's just there's something special about having a Coliseum, a stadium that possesses that much character and that much history. And the field alone, the grounds crew is one of the best, if not the best in the league. It's the prettiest greens I've ever seen as far as a stadium goes. I get it. It has its character and people want to just complain about a lot of things. So of course they're going to say those things.
Yeah. Well, I think there's always an endearing quality, for a fan base, for somebody who grew up going to that stadium, to still love it, even if it's not as well kept or up to date as other stadiums. Even I'm a Mets fan. So we had Citi Field opened in 2009, and you still, since 2009, I mean, if you're at Citi Field, you hear people just talking about how much they miss Shea Stadium. And obviously Shea Stadium was nowhere near the state of the art ballpark that Citi Field is, mm-hmm. but the fan base still just, they miss what they grew up with, and they miss yeah. where they had those memories. So I would imagine that it's certainly similar for some hardcore A's fans that grew up going to that stadium.
The not so hardcore fans, you know, when I was 11, I went to my first A's game, and it's the exact entrance I use. Obviously yeah. I get a little more access now that I'm one of the broadcasters, but I like that it kind of stayed the same. Yeah. I like a little bit of the tradition. I feel like that's what we ultimately love as baseball fans, is the tradition.
Why the A's and not the Giants growing up? How did that happen? Was your family and A's fans, or what?
I'm lucky enough where I kind of got to choose my own fandom, but this kind of was created organically. I was playing Little League. I was playing baseball up until my sophomore year of high school, which is ultimately why I stuck with it, because I thought I was going to be the first female MLB player, but that obviously didn't come to fruition. Apparently you have to be like above 5 foot nothing and hit specialty pitches. Who knew? And so when it came to that, my dad got these tickets, and I was living in Reno at the time. It's about a 3-hour drive from there to here in the Bay Area. And I guess it was Little League Day, so we got like fat free tickets. It was very much the A's, where they had all these amazing, traditions. And I don't know what the word is. When you get minor leagues, like you might want to fill seats with fans. And so we got an amazing deal. And when it came to it, the moment we got there, I sat down, and the third baseman wearing number 3 hit a home run. And I looked at the program, which randomly there was a program on the floor that somebody had purchased and dropped, but I picked it up, and it was Eric Chavez. And it turns out him and I shared a birthday. And then in the same exact program, I saw that there was the center fielder residing in Reno, Nevada. And wouldn't you know it, the center fielder is now my manager, and Mark Kotze. So it's a lot of these full circle moments. And of course, Kotze and I get to talk about our Reno ties, and so that's what it was for me. That exact week, I switched from first to third base, and to know that I shared a position with the third baseman was really cool. And I got to tell Eric Chavez this story, because when I was driving home, or my mom, I guess my dad was driving home. I was 11. That would have been weird. But he was driving home, and I told my dad, like, I want to be the A's reporter. And I found out a week before that women were even allowed to set foot on a baseball field. I had no idea. I thought it was maybe a sideline reporter in football. I'd had no idea they were even allowed women to do those types of things. I think it was Bonnie Bernstein I saw doing some sports stuff. So I was like, hey, I can do that. And my dad was amazing. And he's like, okay, cool. Like, how do we do that? And I was able to tell Eric Chavez this story just last season when the A's inducted him into the Hall of Fame, because he was there with the Mets, and he got his green jacket. Right. And I pulled him aside and said, hey man, you're the reason why I'm here. And he just looked at me and said, tell me the story. And I told him the story, and he's like, thank you for stopping me and telling me that story. So it's stuff like that, you know, and now I get to talk about Eric Chavez. And not only that, but you know, he tried his time and his talents in broadcasting. I definitely think he's a better, you know, coach than anything. And he's more about like, baseball is what I do. It's not who I am. And you get to discover those things. And I remember watching Dallas Braden throw his perfect game. And not only is he's my colleague, but he's my family. You know, Dave Stewart, my mom grew up loving him, and he's a colleague of mine now. So it's stuff like that, that I get to be very thankful about. And so since then, it was always A's for me, and I still love the team. It's a little bit different now that I'm, you know, one of the reporters and a broadcaster, because it's a different type of love and respect. Yeah. But the love that I have for baseball will never go away.
How long have you covered the A's now? When did that dream job actually come to fruition?
I you know, like how we are, like we're not always there, but I was like writing about the A's for like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now. But when NBC called me one day, it was in 2018. And then they hired me in November. What are we going to write about for baseball? But luckily it worked out. The first day, Bob Melvin happened to be selected as the AL Manager of the Year after a fantastic season. So I did get to write a baseball article on my first day, but Warriors were heading toward the playoffs. So around 2018 was when I kind of put my beat reporter hat on, was with NBC for 3 years, covering all aspects of Bay Area sports. But this is my second full season as an A's broadcaster.
And then you did not go to college for broadcast journalism or communications or anything like that, correct?
I tried, but you're looking at a college dropout. I hate school. Kids listening, stay in school.
It's interesting that you had that goal of getting this job at such a young age. And then you went to college for it, but didn't finish college. And then what were you doing in that break of, because you were later in your 20s or mid 20s when you started covering sports, what were you doing? Did you have a career or full-time jobs in between?
I was working for the federal government, actually, in public lands.
Land. Oh, wow. I actually, just this morning, I got an email sent to me that my land survey is off.
I can help you with
backyard.
That.
Yeah. So, and I need to get it fixed ASAP because, like, we're in the middle of selling our house. So now it's like this literally just an hour ago, I got this email that now I have something I have to deal with in the next
few weeks. Need me to look over that, I got you. No. So I was working for the federal government for about 8 years. I got a summer internship. My mother was working there for the Bureau of Land Management, and they were great. They were like, we'll pay for your schooling. And it was obviously a very cushy job. And I got to work with members of the public. I love talking to people and working with them. And obviously when you work as a member, as an employee of the government, people are going to act a certain way, but I didn't mind it because I don't mind difficult people. So I did that for about 8 years, but one day I went to my boss. And I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to quit, move to the Bay Area, and I'm going to work in sports media. And she was like, okay. And the cool thing was, when I've been working at that place since I was 16, these people pretty much raised me. So not one of them was shocked that I was just going to up and try to become an A's reporter or, you know, work in baseball. And then I moved to the Bay Area and did a bunch of odd jobs while I was blogging on the side, and things kind of came to fruition. And that's the cute, short, you know, bubblegum rom-com version of it all. Of course, it was a lot of tears and blood and sweat and crying and a lot of wine and a lot of things that I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I had Melanie Newman on my podcast, and she's the reason that I continue to do it. We talk about that on Short and to the Point, but at the same time, it was just, I knew this was what I wanted to do. So I stuck with it.
What is a better run organization, the federal government or the Oakland A's?
I don't know. I don't know what kind of, I think they're both ran fine. I don't know.
So then
Brandon, you're trying to get me in trouble.
I've never met somebody that has worked for the federal government and the Oakland A's, and I probably
You'll never meet somebody like me, Brandon. Yeah. So that's good.
So it's definitely a unique set of experiences.
Yeah.
So that transition, like that's a pretty big jump to just move to the Bay Area without having a job. Mm-hmm. How long was it that you lived in the Bay Area and you were just kind of blogging then before? What year did you move to the Bay Area? You said 2018 is when you were hired by NBC.
Yeah. So, well, before that, it was about 2015 that I moved to the Bay Area, and I was doing the odd jobs. Nothing was really panning out. So I moved back to Reno, like back in with my family, still blogging for any baseball related website. You can probably find my work on there, because I was working for FanGraphs, and I was so lucky. Everybody was just giving me these writing opportunities, making like maybe $600 a month, barely able to make like my car payment and stuff like that. And then one day I was like, okay, well, I've tried it. I tried 6 months trying to get back in the industry. Nobody was picking me up. And then finally, I get a call from MLB.com, and they're like, we'd love to have you come over and write some stuff through our Cut4 website. And that was like the perfect job for Jess, because it was fun. It was unique. It was everything that was on the field, but outside of the box as well. You know, what we were able to do, like what kind of bubble gum they were chewing or their dugout antics and stuff like that. So that was definitely something that I took a liking to. And then from there, NBC recruited me, and the rest is kind of history.
Well, that's a pretty impressive commitment. I think it's one thing. You hear a lot of those stories about people that are working their way up. Like it's always a grind. It's never, you never just kind of get out of college and land that perfect job, or at least that's rare that happens. I know for me, like I had plenty of years where I was writing for free until I was able to get a salaried position. But I at least was doing it living at home with my family. So like, it's that decision to like, no, like I'm going to go work for the A's. So I'm just moving to the Bay Area. That how did you even come to that moment to like make that choice?
I was just so sick of living the life that I knew I wasn't supposed to be living. I always had like a bigger view for myself. And this was back before Reno kind of blew up. So this was a small town that I was living in. And I was just like, I knew Reno was not it's my hometown. Don't get me wrong. And I love it. But it is very small-minded and people don't think that there's anything besides Reno. And I loved getting out of Reno. And I just knew that like, I pictured myself, like I watched Oprah and like the way that she was able to navigate through stuff. And I was born in Baltimore. So I was exposed to Oprah forever ago because my parents told me about this local news anchor woman who became a national celebrity. And just the way that she approached her interviews too, I just thought it was more than just the subject. She made it bigger than that. And I know that I could have provided that. And then I just networked and I developed like a really good following on social media, but I didn't want to just be like, I didn't want to have a bunch of followers and not be able to do something with it. And I didn't mean that from like a social media influencer way. I definitely wanted to like do my part and inspire other people. And I didn't want everybody to be in sports media either. Like if you want to be a nurse, like go be a nurse. Like you should be able to do whatever you want to do with your life. And I felt like that was the message I needed to tell people. Like, if you want to be a stay-at-home mom, do that, but it better be your own damn decision. I'm so sick of people like doing what their families want them to do and what have you. Mind you, just like you said, I don't have a husband or kids. Like I was able to make $5 a year and be okay with that. Like I didn't have anybody to support. So that certainly helped as well. So I was able to make those rash decisions. And so like I said, when I told my boss that, and she was my boss for years, she was like another mom to me. She didn't even bat an eye. She was like, well, we knew this day would come. She tried to convince me to stay, but it was just like, no, it's not the vibe and not like the plan for me. So it was just me growing a couple and making a decision, as simple as it sounds. But I had to just make the decision and go with it. And like, I'm glad I did it. It was like the dumbest and smartest thing I've ever done.
What is your role right now with the A's? What are you doing on game day?
What do I not do on game day? It depends. If I need to do pre and post for the A's radio network, I will do that. And that means, you know, just hosting essentially, and then I'll conduct some interviews. Pre-game is very, you know, structured to a set schedule, different segments and all of that. So I'll get that ready. In game, I'll have a couple of hits for that as well. Post game is same thing. But then we get callers. So it's not always on a schedule. So I'm just, you know, taking calls or offering analysis. We have post game interviews. And sometimes if I'm not on pre and post, I'm still running down to grab a player for a post game interview. That's when the A's win, which means I haven't done that a lot this season. But that's been interesting to watch as well. So I've been doing that. And then I also do social media. So the A's YouTube channel, I'm conducting interviews mainly with like the guys who just got promoted, and I talk to their families, which is always a feel good thing. We just had Jacob Wilson on the show. He just was our first round draft pick. So I talked to him. So it's like a dugout conversation. And then of course, you know, I'm just paying attention to in-game stuff, to do any of the post-game stuff, pre-game, you know, talking to Mark Kotze, post-game talking to Mark Kotze, all of those things. Obviously, I'm lucky that I work for the comeback of the Awful Announcing now. If I have to write anything off of that, I'll do something like that. In-game, if I have some time, I'll write a quick article if I need to. So I'm doing a little bit of everything, which is exactly what I wanted to do. We have a great podcast, too. It's one of the most downloaded podcasts in baseball because we're A's 24/7, and that's previous stuff that's, you know, the big ALDS games, really, really long time ago stuff. We'll have like historic calls and stuff like that. And that's always playing on A's Cast. So it's a little bit of everything, which is like the perfect thing for me, 'cause I get bored if I just do one thing over and over again.
So A's Cast is its own podcast. It's not the like pre and post game show that is then podcasting.
It's the same thing. So it's also like if you can't get it on the radio network, if you're not local, you would listen to A's Cast. So it would be you just have a bunch of A's 24/7 coverage and content leading up to the pre and post game show.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Do you travel with the team?
No.
So how does that work? Just getting like all the sound for pre and post game shows is
luckily I have really good connections. And even if it's not like a current player, like the other day I had, see, I just forget my interviews so much. I have so much. So it's like a former player I'll have on. I had like Ryan Sweeney randomly. I like to like surprise people. Like, remember this name? And then I'll have him pop on. Like Dan Straley will come on every now and then. But if I'm physically there, I do like to get opposing teammates too. Like I had Tristan Casas on recently because, and there's always an A's connection because everybody's a former A's player, right? So that definitely helps. So I talked to Tristan and he played with Nick Allen, who was our shortstop at the time. So I'll talk to them. Obviously the minor leaguers, I could easily just text one of them and have them hop on. I'm so lucky that I have those connections. So that certainly helps. And then sometimes if I can't get an interview, I pop on for a quick live segment. Like yesterday was the trade deadline, obviously just plenty of stuff to talk about there. So it's for me, it's just kind of easy. It's just developing your connections. A lot of media I'm close with, so I'll have them if it's the opposing members, media, that type of thing.
How do you like taking callers on the radio? Like what's the fans connection with the A's? What's the fan relationship with the A's right now and having to deal with those live callers on the radio?
I mean, it's the same callers we get every single time. So for me, it's a comfort, like, oh, Greg from Slow is calling. I know what this is going to be about, you know, John from Monterey, big fan of the show, like always calling. It's the same people. We have Road Trip Mike. He goes to every baseball game that the A's are on the road. He'll give us a call and let us know like the vibe, what's going down. And they still love the fan or love the team and love the players. And like, obviously the big thing going on is, you know, the move to Vegas, but the players really aren't distracted by it. At the end of the day, like, they play baseball, they know what they got to do. And Mark Kotze, of course, started his career with the Oakland A's. So he's not unaware of what's going on. So he knows those are things that people need to address. But at the end of the day, like, it's not the player's fault. It's not up to them. And they're not making these decisions. And so they're just trying to concentrate on what's going on. And as broadcasters, I understand that I'm at the forefront, the front line of some of these things. So if they want to vent, that's great. You know, during the reverse boycott, I knew for a fact we're going to get a lot of callers and those things happen. It's just one of those situations. And I don't take it personally because it's not, they understand what I'm doing. And the relationships are certainly there. It's the best group of guys I've ever worked with is the team. Like there's young guys, obviously the veteran guys. I've never been turned down for an interview. Sometimes it'll happen like as far as like timing goes, like I can't interrupt their infield grounder sesh or, you know, taking infield or of course batting practice. So those things happen, but they're very approachable, which is great. And so that definitely helps me.
Are there things for the fan base to be proud of as A's fans right now? Like obviously like they're not winning much. The move is looming. So like, what is there for fans to be rooting for and proud of?
Yeah. And I love that question because there is a lot. I mean, it's a rebuilding stage, right? And you get to see the future of not just the A's, but MLB. You know, they're promoting these young guys who are not only highly touted, but they're showing why they are highly touted. You know, Zach Gelof and Tyler Soderstrom, the top two of the top prospects in the league just got promoted. And Zach Gelof has his fourth home run. And just acting like he's been there the entire time. But on the other hand, there are some still veteran guys that wouldn't have gotten the same opportunities if they went elsewhere. Of course, Jace Peterson just got traded to the Diamondbacks, but he maybe wouldn't have gotten his major league shot if he were with another organization. Aledmys Diaz, same thing. The A's called him the day after the World Series run and win and said, hey, do you need a job? We'll take you. You know, you get to see these guys like Ramon Laureano is one of the most underappreciated outfielders of all time, really. And I think that's because it's not just the A's. I think it's an East Coast, West Coast bias thing. You're a Mets fan. Chris Bassett, you probably never heard of until he was on your team. Mark Canna, probably didn't know how much exposure he was getting hit by pitches, you know, just because it's the East West Coast type of thing. You know, we got to see Starling Marte during that amazing trade that Let's Go Mama Kim Ang made. And I feel like those types of things that I get to see before the world gets to see is really cool as well. And, you know, watching Mark Kotze be turn into a big league manager has been really great. And, you know, just being able to watch some of these guys grow and learn about themselves, and they get to do it when there isn't so much media kind of distracting them, and they get to experiment, whether it's a starter getting pushed to the bullpen or turning into a long reliever. Like, these things are happening, and you get to learn about them more because they know that it's a different goal. They can't be concentrating on going to the World Series. That's probably not going to happen, but they get to concentrate on their own personal goals and developing themselves. And like I said, the opportunity, and there's a lot of, you know, why not scenarios too. I mean, we're coming toward the end of the season. We're going to see a lot more exposure, and the front office gets to see how these guys are maybe earlier than their ETA perhaps says that they would be in the big. So that's definitely cool. And like I said, like, we're so attached to numbers when it comes to this game, whether it's wins versus losses. And I'm very much one of the people who say wins for a pitcher doesn't matter, but JP Sears perhaps deserves some more wins than maybe his numbers are characterizing him out to be. But we get to see those little things, and I get to concentrate on that, knowing that the win and loss column isn't necessarily going to be on the A side. I get to pick the brains of some of these guys, and it helps me from a broadcasting standpoint, because I get to develop relationships with them. You know, in 2 years, these guys start to figure some stuff out. I can approach them a little bit more, knowing that I was there from their infancy of their career.
How did you go about building your social media presence? Was that just a slow grind, or was that something? Because that you built that up before you were working with the A's, or at least a good portion of it.
Yeah, well, I paid followers, Brandon. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. I don't know.
Great advice.
It's great advice, kids. No, I think for me, I woke up one day and just decided to be Jess Kleinschmidt instead of being the next Katie Nolan, the next Michelle Beadle. I was trying so hard to be them and Sarah Spain when I was like, well, why don't you just be Jess Kleinschmidt? So for me, it just like, and humor definitely helps. I feel like baseball can be so, it's ran by a lot of broadcasters who are very boring. And I just wanted to be real, you know, and like, you could see the emotion on some of these guys' faces. So instead of just like asking them, I started developing relationships with them. Like, hey, you look pissed. Were you pissed? And, you know, it just kind of one of those things. And I definitely was more approachable in that regard. And I engage with my followers too. That is a huge thing. People love to just tweet and that's it. And I think for me, the reason why I was so good at landing some of these jobs is because people would see on my social media, I would reply to people. Sometimes just giving them their own shit because people are very mean on social media. But at the same time, I also felt like it was important to show people like, you can talk to me, whether it's I messed up on the broadcast or I need to do something better, or let's just have a conversation, because at the end of the day, I'm still just a normal person behind this tweet, these tweets, because people didn't think I was a real person at one point, which was really bizarre. I like had, it just blows my mind. And so they see how approachable I am. That causes more people to follow my work, listen to me. I love talking to the fans out on the field. If they want me to sign something for them or just talk to them, I will do it. Because I ultimately have a platform and I'm mentoring a lot of young women and people in this industry. And I feel like we need more of that. So for me, it was about being approachable, and seeing that I was approachable helped land jobs too. It was easy. Like NBC, they hired me through a DM. They're like, hey, we love your stuff. Why don't you come in for an interview? And that those are those things that happened. And because it's no different, like if I want to have somebody on my podcast, DMing them, that's how I got Foltis. You know, like it just, you just DM them and they know you're a real person because they see you and they attach you to content. They see me talking to a person like I'm a normal person. Like that stuff is a game changer. People get so obsessed with followers and the number of them. It's like, well, then maybe talk to people, like be a normal person and that'll maybe grow your following. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter because I'm a very much quality over quantity. And maybe I'm just full of shit because I definitely have a lot of followers. So I'm like saying that. It's like when somebody's famous and rich, they're like, I'd be okay without money. You don't know what it's like to not have money. Shut up. So it's just kind of like that. So I think that's ultimately what it was. I wanted to be myself and authentic and vulnerable and real. And you can't not be that. Think about the broadcasting, you know, 162 games where I'm on the radio and it's like, I don't have parents, so when it's Mother's Day and Father's Day, I'm emotional. And we're all emotional on the broadcast. You have to be real about that stuff. because at the end of the day, we're an extension of the players, we're an extension of the fans, we're in a way an extension of the game. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And so I want people to know that, like, yeah, there's a certain thing we have to abide by, but I'm just a normal person at the end of the day.
You've mentioned a few people, Katie Nolan, Sarah Spain, Melanie Newman, but a lot of them, they're more recent in sports media. So growing up, when you decided that you wanted to cover the A's, who in the industry were you watching, reading, listening to, especially because at that time there were a lot less women working in sports media compared to what it is today?
I don't know if I was watching that many women. I said, I saw Bonnie Bernstein. I wouldn't have any idea what she sounded like. I just saw that she was holding a microphone covering sports. To me, it didn't really matter. That's all I needed to see. Right. I'm like, cool. Like, let's fuck shit up. Sorry. Let's do this.
That's fine.
And so it's kind of one of those things. I was looking up to like Ken Rosenthal. That's mm-hmm. who I was. Adam Schefter. Like, and same thing. I didn't know that you could have a female sports personality. I thought it was like, and I got where that was coming from. Right. Because no matter what I do, if I'm on a panel with Dallas Braden or somebody from the George Contos, like, I will never have an MLB playing resume like those dudes. So I had to ask the questions, which sucks because like, what am I supposed to do? Say like, well, I played up until my I hit baseball through Babe Ruth, like that can't do much. So I have to go out and be curious and I have to do all of those things. But at the end of the day, I felt like I was able to create my own thing. So it really wasn't until I met Melanie Newman that I had women that I could look up to. And really for me, I'm glad I didn't kind of obsess over certain women because I had to create my own thing or I'd be like absolutely obsessed with it. But as time went on, you know, I definitely liked what Katie Nolan did because there was definitely humor behind it, but I wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing everything that she was doing. And it really wasn't until recently where I saw the resumes of some of these women and what they were able to do. So early on, I had nothing but like male mentors and men that I looked up to, which really sucked, but what else was I supposed to do, you know?
I mean, I'm sure your baseball resume though still exceeds some of the sports writers and broadcasters. Like there's definitely plenty of writers and broadcasters that have not played high school baseball. So like pretty impressive.
And they're all the men that I'm sharing a press box with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you were playing baseball with boys in high school?
Yes. I didn't know that there was softball, Brandon, until like, they're like, hey, you should probably like, what if you want to go to college? Shouldn't you want to play softball? I'm like, what's that? I had no idea it existed. And so when I found out, I had to learn how to hit all over again. I had to make new friends because these were the boys I was raised with, you know, from the time I was 7 or 8. And then I get to high school, but we're already awkward and we hate, like, we don't. And I didn't even know like girls were supposed to like boys. I thought they were just supposed to be our friend. I had no idea. I was like, I don't know. And so when I switched to softball, it was a whole thing. And I did it for collegiate reasons, which is funny because, you know, I'm a college dropout. Like I didn't do anything, but I had to make new friends. I had to learn how to hit. This girl coming out with this rise ball from the side, I'm like, what is she doing? What is that? I had no idea. So it was a whole learning curve, but I loved it. My defense was the best defense probably in Northern Nevada. But I couldn't hit I was like Omar Vizquel. I couldn't hit, but like nothing was getting past me in the infield. So it was definitely a learning curve from that. And same thing, like I got like across the way, like all my best friends were playing baseball and I was just like the new kid on the block. And like, it was a whole new world. And I'm glad I did it, of course, not just for collegiate reasons, but I'm still close with a lot of those girls. And my dad got to coach softball and he loved it, but it was definitely a huge change when you're, you know, what was I, 13, 14, when you're still trying to figure out who you are. Like it was a lot.
Did that help kind of set you up to aspire to have a career that's in a male dominated industry?
I think so. I can't 100%, there's no like data to back it up, but I feel like for me, even I have to like look up and it's like, I'm the only woman on the broadcasting team, or I'll be the only woman in a clubhouse sometimes. And I like forget that that's not normal.
Yeah.
And that definitely helped in that regard. I'm like, oh, right. This isn't like the norm to be, you know, and then like, but I definitely, you know, put people in their place when they're like, you're good for a girl. Like, no, I'm just good. I can just be good. And even the people that I work with, like, they know what my strengths are. But I also know, like, I have enough self-awareness to know what I don't know, you know, and I'm lucky enough where I can ask the questions. And it's not me being stupid. They're not stupid questions. The players I talk to, the managers I talk to, they know I have to go on the broadcast and talk about them. It's helping them out just as much. And, you know, I can only say, like, I played a certain amount. Like, I know the basics and I know, like, the camaraderie. And I know, like, every time a guy retires, the thing he misses the most is his bros in the clubhouse. So I remember those things. It's the human element. Like, the numbers are fine. But I just remember early on in my life that that's what they're going to miss the most. And I know that those guys that I grew up with, those were my brothers, you know? So I couldn't imagine spending even longer doing that or playing a sport from, isn't it weird? Like, I stopped playing sports at 19, like my cleats were hung up and the guys that I work with still played. It blows my mind. And I feel like the Cody Bellinger meme where he looks like Stone, like looking around, like that's what I feel like. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're still playing. And I stopped at one point. Like, it just blows my mind. And that's ultimately what it is too. Like, my anxiety and my stress goes away the moment I'm at the ballpark. Doesn't matter what's going on. And so many players told me that too. Doesn't matter if they've got issues at home and even if they're nervous about their numbers at the plate, they still feel calm at the ballpark. And I'm lucky that I get that as well too.
You mentioned that you engage on social media. How does that, like just being a woman working in baseball and working in sports media, like I'm sure you have a lot of ignorant replies and stuff.
What? So no, Brandon, it's always puppies and candy. What are you talking about?
I think usually the easy answer is, oh, well, I just ignore it. I don't read it. But you do respond to a lot of those, to a lot of people on Twitter. So you are seeing that. So how was that almost like an adjustment to have to know that, like, you're going to be reading all these mentions and you are going to see some of that stuff?
I should ignore it, but I don't like to ignore it. I tell people a lot, like, and I'm very much a hypocrite with it, like, just ignore the comments. And the thing that I've noticed about it is people like, oh, just don't read the comments. And it's always like a guy who works a 9-to-5 living in, or like working in a cubicle, like, shut up, Michael, you don't know what I have to deal with. Not to mention the fact people will screenshot things like, did you see what this person said about you? And it's like, oh, now I can't ignore it. Like, no matter what I do, you can mute everybody. You can block everybody, do whatever you got to do. You can't not ignore it. Sometimes I'm just doing my job and they'll say, like, even yesterday I made this joke about the trade deadline, because I'm constantly looking at my phone when I'm like working to see like if something went down for the trade deadline. And somebody goes, just live your life, put your phone down. I'm like, I literally can't. I can't go on this broadcast and say, you know what, Mike 014735 said to just live my life and put my phone down. Like, I can't. Like, no. Like, it's literally my job to be on social media, and I'm blessed because of it, because not only can I break news quickly, I can read news quickly. So I can't ignore social media. I do tell people to ignore the social media stuff, but sometimes people are just stupid and need to be put in their place. So I'm going to say about that.
Who are your mentors now? You mentioned Melanie Newman, that you talk to her a lot. Like, who are you going to for advice, and who are you going to even vent about things with?
Melanie Newman, I don't go to her a lot. I go to her for too much. So me, her, and Danny Wexelman. Danny Wexelman does literally everything. You're a Mets guy. You know who Danny is. She does SNY, MLB Network Radio, ESPN, SEC, ACC, all of the C's, all of the things. We have a group chat that has literally saved my life. So I definitely go to them, because there's certain things that we as women go through that men won't understand. Like, for instance, this, I bet you, Brandon, you prepped, of course. You didn't have to do anything to your face, right, to come on camera?
No, woke up like this.
I did not. I had to curl my hair. I had to put makeup on, had to do all like the, have you ever done top eyeliner, Brandon?
No, I've watched my wife do it, but I have not attempted to do it myself.
And you respect your wife a lot more now, don't you?
Oh yeah, of course.
Boom, there it is. So imagine having to do all of that. And people like, just go on camera without makeup.
Right.
First of all, no, absolutely not. I don't care if 4 people see this. I'm not showing up looking homely. So we have to do the prep in multiple ways too. And it's just how we present ourselves. So we have like the extra stuff we have to deal with. Like going on camera, there was times I'd look at my body and say, I couldn't tell you anything that I said because I'm so nervous that somebody's going to pick apart what I look like like crazy. And they don't do that with men, you know? So we have all that extra stuff. So they've helped me with that. Susan Slusser is, you know, when I got on the A scene, she just taught me how to literally report. And that means the, and she told me one time, I was like, I asked a stupid question today. She's like, Jess, I've been covering this team for 20 plus years. I ask stupid questions all the time. And they're not even stupid questions because you never know the answer you get back. And so she taught me like, it's okay to ask the stupid questions. And I quote that because I call them stupid questions doesn't necessarily mean that they're stupid questions. So she's certainly helped me a lot. Amy Lawrence from CBS Sports Radio, phenomenal. Like she's really helped me a lot too. And I am so appreciative of her. And so like those types of women, and like, I just met Susan Waldman the other day, and even like whenever, every time the Yankees are in town, it's just like, and she just walks up to me and says, what do you need from me? And like, it's like, not many women do that. Like Julia Morales, same thing when the Astros are in town, she's like, do you need anything from me today? And, you know, and I've adopted a lot of the young girls too, like Paige Leckie, Kennedy Landry, Molly Burkhart, all these girls from MLB.com, and Sonia Chen is a freaking prodigy. She does MLB.com stuff as well. So as much as I'm getting mentored, I'm mentoring as well. And I've had chats with Katie Nolan too, like just the stresses that we've dealt with. And so they've definitely helped me a lot. So those women for sure. And I got to meet Kim Ng, and it was the most starstruck I've ever been. And she gave me an interview and it was fantastic. Imagine covering somebody for 5 or 6 years saying that she almost got a job, almost got a job, almost got a job. And then she's on my pod, on my show as the Mets GM, or sorry, Marlins GM, good Lord, Marlins GM. And she's telling me that she almost gave up a few times. And so I'm like, okay, we're all like kind of on this shit show together. And I think that that's super important. So those women for sure have made like a massive impact on me. And I feel like without the women, like we wouldn't feel like we were, it's just different, you know. And Trisha Whitaker, same thing from the Rays. She's been fantastic. And I can't tell you the amount of times where if I need a favor, they're just there. They just get it. And that is like, that's huge. It's new. A lot of times, like people wouldn't respond to DMs and stuff. So I'm very thankful for them.
How is mentoring other people now? Rewarding? Is there, this is like a little bit of a weird question, but it's such a competitive industry. Is there ever a sense of like being concerned that you're helping people that are trying to make it in this industry and maybe get jobs that you might want at some point?
You know, and it's funny that you mentioned that, like there's been times where people have stepped on my toes. Absolutely. Very recently. So, and I think from that point of view, there's definitely been times where I've applied for the same job as one of my best friends. She got the job and she called me and I was like, oh my gosh, no, you're perfect for this job. So these things happen. There's a difference between helping somebody out. I've literally been sitting next to one of my best friends, not physically, but like in the Zoom room, and we're going for the same job. And I would text her and say, they're going to ask you this, they're going to ask you that, they're going to ask you this, they're going to ask you that. And so like those things certainly exist where I'm helping somebody else. There's times where people will try to ride my coattails. Absolutely. Which frustrates me. I can't tell you the amount of times I'll go on a show and somebody will message them saying like, hey, Jess said that you'd come on my show, when I wouldn't say these things, you know? And I definitely know that like I've been mentoring girls, none of the girls I've mentioned, of course, but I've been mentoring girls and I've given them advice and they're like, well, I don't want to do that. Can I just like come to a game and shadow you? And I'll say, first of all, that's like not a thing because you have to go through Major League Baseball, these other things. And no offense, but I don't think you've earned it. You know, and I don't think that like I worked very, very hard, and you have to attach your name to this person. That's like your reputation. That's all these other things. So those certainly have happened, but I don't think I've ever gone for a job with somebody like in a negative way that we were like, oh, I'm out to get her. Like it's definitely right. Been the people. And that's a beautiful thing too. If I'm on the same level as somebody else who I think is just fantastic, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they think I'm on the same level as her. And we're both being interviewed by like, that's crazy. That means they see something in me that this other person has. And I look up to them. like that's always a positive, but there's a lot of young people who are like, can you just be my mentor? And I don't think they know what mentoring means. Because mentoring doesn't mean I'm going to carry you into the clubhouse and give you a job. That's not what mentoring means. Mentoring means is if you have advice, I'm going to help you. Mentoring means if you have any questions about how to interview somebody, I can help you. I cannot hold your hand through the process. And I think about this a lot when I think about the Michelle Beatles of the world and the Sarah Spains of the world. If they were to offer me 1 second of advice, that's mentoring in a way. But the road is still bumpy, right? They paved the way. You hear that, right? We paved the way, shattering glass ceilings. But if you think about it, paving the way doesn't mean it's still a smooth ride. You shattered glass ceilings, there's still specks of glass on the floor. There's still a lot that we need to go through. And so I feel like that's why I'm successful, is because I knew it was bumpy. I knew, I love the bumps. Like, it's like when you, like, you know, those weird people who are like, I love turbulence. It feels like a roller coaster. First of all, you're a psycho. Second of all, I get where you're coming from, because I like the challenges that are brought to me. These people can't learn if they don't deal with the bumps and the bullshit and all the things that you're throwing at you. Because for me, you have to go on camera. You have to go on the radio. You have to be a certain way. It doesn't matter what you're going through in your private life. Like, you have to deal with it. Like, my mom just died of cancer recently. My grandma died a week ago. My best friend, one of my best childhood friends, died a week and a half ago. And I could take time off if I need to, but I can't, I don't want to. It's my therapy. So these things happen. And I don't think that those people understand it. They just think you put a microphone in front of you, you ask a question, and life is good. It takes a long time to get to the right spot where you can be this certain person and develop the relationship and do what you need to do. Brandon, I think you can understand it too. Like, vulnerability is very important to ask the questions, right? Like, you have to understand, like, there's a bigger question than just saying like, hey, you went 0-for-4. What was working for you? Or obviously what wasn't working for you? There's so many things you can broaden in those questions. And you have to like dig deep and understand that there's more than just a mechanical situation there. Like, oh, I worked on my hands. Okay, what was that process like? You have to like do the follow-up questions and make sure that they're willing, but you can't be vulnerable if that person doesn't A, trust you, or know that you're being vulnerable as well. And that helps when in that regard. And I feel like a lot of people are so surface level about it. So it's definitely, I won't just mentor anybody because I've been screwed over in the past because of it. And so, and it's no different. Like, if I'm dating somebody or I'm a friend with somebody, they deserve like my full attention, but some people don't.
Yeah. I think also those bumps probably give you a lot more things to be proud of when you look back and reflect on the ride and on your career, you know, like just the fact that you see all the different things that you've had to overcome and mm-hmm. have overcame. So as opposed to just being handed something, like it's much more rewarding, and I would imagine that I would hope that you're able to feel that with your own career when you look back.
I hope so. I feel like it's difficult. Like, baseball's 24/7, man. It's like, it's hard to like take a step back and smell the roses, which I love in a certain aspect, because I'm lucky enough where if I'm not on the road with them, so I can like reflect a little bit. But I also, it's just like, you can't really reflect until like November 1st sometimes, you know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting from that. And by the time November 1st comes around, I couldn't tell you what happened in April.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know.
It's a long time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sleeping, going sleepy sleeps.
Do you develop friendships with active players? I remember I asked Ryan Rucco the same question, because he's a similar age, but when you're in your 20s and 30s covering the same players every single day who are in their 20s and 30s, do you naturally become friends with some of these players?
Absolutely. And it's funny that you asked that, because somebody recently during the trade deadline, I was like, I wish I wasn't as close with this guy or that guy, because it kind of freaks me out a little bit. But I also know that when it comes to certain of these things, like, cause Tony Kemp was a big guy on the trade deadline rumor, and he's legitimately my friend, and you can't help but ignore that, because I've been covering him since 2019, and like, you know, his wife welcomed a baby, and it was a rainbow baby. This was a miracle. Their child was born, and these things aren't even things that I find out. It's just like what other people are writing about. And I remember thinking like, I'd be really bummed if he got traded, but like, imagine if he got traded onto like a playoff and you know, intending team. And that would be great. So those things certainly happen, but I definitely think it helps me because Tony was struggling in the first half and I was like, hey, can you hop on the radio? Can we talk about what you're working on? Because I have to talk about it on the broadcast. I can't ignore the fact that you are struggling. He's like, sure. So he'll talk to me about that stuff. And like Hogan Harris, one of the A's pitchers, he was struggling too. And he had an outing. And I remember during the post game press conference, I wasn't there to ask him the questions because I was in studio. He gave this chat or this interview and he had good swing and miss, but he got tattooed that day. And I was like, that's weird. And so so on the broadcast, I was like, well, it sounds like he's not taking a lot of accountability. And I was like, that was such a dick move, Jess. So I talked to him and I was like, this is what I said on the broadcast. Are you an optimistic person or am I just, and I said the word asshole. Am I an asshole? And he's like, no, like I'm just an optimistic person. And the thing was, he goes, my wife says the same thing. My wife will always say, why aren't you upset right now? And I was like, okay, cool. Like it was a human element. It was a human interaction. So I went on the broadcast and I apologized for me just jumping to conclusions because it's what I heard, but does it mean that's what it was? So I have to develop the relationship with Hogan Harris to say, do you mind if I say this on the broadcast? Because certain things, I don't mind doing that. I'm like, hey, do you mind if I say them on the broadcast? Like James Caprillion said one thing that was kind of spicy once. I was like, do you mind if I publish that? He's like, oh yeah, go for it. And I'm like, okay, cool. At least they know like what I'm going to be talking about. And it's difficult from a radio perspective, especially because TV, you have a quick hit and you're done. Radio, you explain everything.
Yeah.
You know? And so the relationship certainly I've developed personal, the same thing. I could text or DM a guy and be like, hey, can you pop on real quick? That's certainly helped my career, like big time. So those things definitely help as well.
I'm sure the players also appreciate that thoughtfulness and mm-hmm. the fact that you're asking them if they mind that you talk about it or you're apologizing for something or just even bringing something up that you may have said that could cause an issue that you're going to them first before them finding out and then having to come confront you. So
yeah.
I would imagine they appreciate that, that you're willing to share those vulnerabilities.
Yeah, I also hate being fake too. Like if a guy is struggling, like JP Sears, like he's doing great, but he never shows a lot of emotion. And I physically saw him have emotion. I was like, hey, like you don't usually act like that. And he was like, and he gave me, it was after an outing. They're going to be short and sweet with you. It doesn't matter how good or bad they did. It's very difficult for them. And I understand that. And the next day it was like, he had the memory of a goldfish, like nothing happened. And he didn't take it personal. He knew I was doing my job. Most of these guys know I'm doing my job. And that's the beauty of it too. And if they're struggling, they know they're struggling. I don't have to say like, do you know what your batting average is over the last 10 games? Like they know if they're hitting a .400, like they know what's going on. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just kind of one of those things where they're not in that. And I genuinely like love people at the end of the day, like, and I understand it and stuff. And like, I'm a very curious person too. Like you did this, like, why did you do that? And I think that they like that too, because, and then it gives me more stuff to talk about. And then it just makes me look good that I say, oh, so I approached him and I asked him about this. Cause it looks like I went like the extra mile, and I developed relationships with their families too. Like, hey, like, was he like this growing up? And I don't mean that in a mean way. Just like, has he always like been obsessed with doing this little thing with his gloves? And they appreciate that too, because the parents are obsessed with their kids and they want them to succeed. So that helps as well.
Yeah. And I think that, that level of curiosity that you have there, like in going to ask the family and with those types of questions, I think that's what makes for great context and great interviews and great information for the fans. I think that's something that really, really helps, just having mm-hmm. that natural curiosity.
Definitely.
Is there a current player, active player that you've interviewed that you've walked away from that interview saying that this person definitely has a future in media if they want it?
Tony Kemp, easily. Stephen Vogt, definitely. Chris Bassett. Chris Bassett will give you such a damn good interview. Cole Calhoun, really good. Sam Moll, who just got traded to the Reds. I told Reds media, I'm like, you're going to love him. He's a great interview. And going back to Tony Kemp, he actually taught me a lot about my questions, because I could ask Tony Kemp one question and he'll make it bigger than the question. And I try to do that too. And I feel like I can learn a lot from people like that. Matt Chapman, I think, actually really has a future in that, especially if you get him after he's had a good or a bad day. Sometimes you couldn't get him to shut up. I remember I sat him down for all A's once, and we only had like a 30-minute thing, and he kept going. I literally had like, okay, Chappie, I love you, but like, I've got Mark Canna coming up. But like, you know, same thing. I talked to his dad. His dad gave me all these baby photos of him, so I was prepared to embarrass him that day. So I think definitely he's got a future in that. I'm actually really curious. Oh, Brandon Belt. Brandon Belt is a fabulous interview. He's really funny. And then, of course, Joey Votto. I did get to meet him. People don't think I've met him before. I'm a big Joey Votto fan. But he's so smart. And from a personality perspective, I feel like he can go the extra mile. Analytically, he can go the extra mile. And he was practicing it this offseason, you know, last season when he was injured. So I'm excited for that as well. I think Buster Posey is low-key really funny. I think he definitely could have a future in that. I'm trying to get Dan Straley to do more media stuff. I think he's got a future in the media as well. So those are probably the main ones that come to mind.
Are A's fans, do they like the movie Moneyball?
I think so. And you know, what's interesting is the first time I watched it, I hated it. The second time I watched it, I hated it. The third time I watched it, it was during COVID. So I just wanted to feel something. And I loved it. Billy Bean's now one of my bosses, which is crazy to think about. Little pissed off I wasn't working for NBC Sports when Brad Pitt was here to like sit down interviews, but maybe one day, maybe for Moneyball too, who knows? I think one of my best friends, FP Santangelo Jr., his dad played for the A's during the Moneyball year, and they show him every now and then. And he said that he'll watch it and like hate watch it. He's like, that's not true. That didn't happen. And I had Scott Hatterberg, who works for the A's still, beautiful human being. I had him on one of my podcasts, and I said, what are some of the inaccuracies? And it's like the main one is Art Howe was not a butthead. He was a precious baby angel. He was wonderful. We didn't sell sodas or anything like that. Like that wasn't a thing. And I think Hatterberg himself said, I didn't really struggle at first as much as we made it out to be. I like the actor portrayal of Ron Washington. I felt like that was very accurate. And because Wash is just like his own person. But I will say, like, just talking to Billy Bean, you get lost in what he says, and not in a bad way, just because he's so worldly and everything like that. But I liked how they embraced the actual Coliseum, just how special that was. But I think overall fans do like the movie because it was such a magical time. That was actually the year I fell in love with the A's, you know, and every single front office adopts something from the analytics department from that movie. And I think that's important as well, just because it made me think more. And I think about that, like, just from how the A's work. They love a super utility guy. And the reason why they like that is because of the Moneyball thing. And Ryan Noda, one of our first basemen, he gets on base. And that's Moneyball to a T. And I always pray that Joey Votto ends up on the A's one day, because he also gets on base. So that's like immediate. I'm like, he gets on base. Like, what else do I need to say? So just stuff like that. And it actually shows the intricacies of the game. And when you talk to people who want to work in the front office because they're obsessed with stats, is because they find those little things. And it's a great thing for the nerds, you know, like, and for me as a woman who can't sit on the panel with Braden and Michael Morse or Santangelo or any of those guys or Stu, because I don't have an MLB background, I have to depend on those numbers because we need something to talk about, because I didn't play up to a certain level. So I'm very thankful for that. But I think overall, not just A's fans, but baseball fans really embrace that movie.
Yeah. So in addition to working for the A's, as we've discussed, you also work for Comeback Media and host the Short and to the Point podcast. So you already have a busy schedule with the A's. Why were you interested in working for Awful Announcing and the comeback and launching a new podcast here as well?
I love baseball, but I want to show that I'm versatile. And we talked about it before. I'm very curious. I'm extremely curious. And I think in obviously both of our producer, Phil, we had a soccer analyst come on. And that was just an educational interview for myself. And Phil, who's a big soccer guy, loved it because he's like, Jess, you're not supposed to say that. You said that wrong. I'm like, cool. Like, let me figure this stuff out. And I want people to know, like, there's more to me than baseball. Like, I want to have WWE people on here or motocross people. Like, and I don't want to just stick to sports. And like, I think that that's what's interesting for me too, because like when I interview the Tony Kemps of the world, it's impossible for me to make it short and sweet. Okay, you played well. Okay, you didn't play well. What are you working on? What are you not working on? I want to talk about like the time you found God. I want to talk about the time that you didn't think God exists. I want to talk about these types of things. You know, I feel like that's so important. And the one thing that we all universally have in common, whether it's sports or not, is like, hopefully we all have something that we love. And I want to know why, because I'm still figuring out life. How are they figuring out life? So that's where I'm coming in. And I feel like everybody has a story. You know, you could have just asked me like, why Oakland A's? And it could have been the end of the conversation, right? Easily. I'd been like, I don't feel like, no, I like baseball. We're done here, Brandon. Thanks. And I feel like that's not how people are. And on the same wavelength, I love being able to break people out of their shell. I'm very thoughtful with my interviews. You know, I don't want to just like, and I want to be charismatic with them because I know they have a story to tell. There's going to be somebody that's interested in it, whether it's my family or not, because I have people in my family who love to listen to my interviews, but I don't want them to only care about baseball either. So for me, it was breaking out. I missed writing a lot too. And so I'm so thankful that they have the comeback and Awful Announcing. It's the one thing that I missed so much and I'm really good at it. So I think that that's great as well. And there's certain aspects that like you can write about better than you can talk about or be on the radio or podcast about. So I think that was important as well. And not to mention the fact I'm better when I can do a sit down interview, whether it's soccer related or golf related. Mind you, everybody in that clubhouse plays golf. So I have to do golf or what am I going to talk to these guys about? Steph Curry would sit on the bench waiting for him to go play in the game. And he'd think about the round he played the day before. Like people are obsessed with whatever they're obsessed with. So I feel like that's interesting too. And I don't like the cliche is like, what makes you tick? Okay, well, yes, I want to know that, but in a more conversive way, because at the end of the day, it's developing a relationship. And I can't tell you the amount of times where I would leave a conversation and they're like, that was a really fun interview. That was fun. And that's my ultimate goal. And I want people to listen and be curious just as much, you know?
Did you happen to hear, or did anybody tell you about, Dave Portnoy's response to Jared Carrabas being on your podcast?
Oh, wait. Yes, I do. I remember somewhat. That was kind of a crazy week for me. But I know people, I remember somebody DM or tweeted me. They're like, you need, because I said, Jared offered the information saying like I was held back from Barstool. And right, I commented on it. Yeah, he offered that. And, and so I commented, they're like, Jessica, you should have done this. I'm like, you literally gave 4 seconds of a clip. He offered the information. I commented, but I don't remember what Dave Portnoy said.
Oh my God. It was fine. He spoke about it on a different Barstool podcast, but he had just essentially said that like he took issue with Jared kind of saying that he left to prove that he could succeed without Barstool and without Portnoy, without the Barstool brand. And Portnoy's issue was he said that Jared left because he got more money. So like that was his, he was almost like, why was he saying that if he left just because of for more money,
but he didn't say anything bad about me.
Nothing bad about you. And short and to the point, got a mention, your name got a mention as well. So like,
let's go.
Great stuff there.
Yeah.
So what are your career aspirations now? Are they in print? Is it TV? Is it radio? Is it still just kind of trying to do a combination of all of it? Where do you envision your career going?
I'm definitely on the right path. And I'm so thankful for this opportunity, Ben Koo, if you're listening, I'm very thankful for everything that you've done, literally, because I want to be the Mike Trout of sports media, the five tool player. And I'm doing that. I think my next like big personal goals, I want, this is a lofty one, but I've pretty much done everything that I've said I was going to do. I want to host a Netflix special and, or like a Netflix show, whether like in Chelsea Handler's show on Netflix was really, really cool because same thing. She just had a different background. Mailman's here. She had a different background.
Mailman is here.
Mailman's here.
I warned you about that before the podcast started, and it's happening right now.
Attention, Brandon. That's why I'm going to get a Netflix special. No. And I liked what Chelsea Handler did because she just talked and she had a conversation, and that's my ultimate goal. And I want to write a book of poetry too. And people want me to write like a book about my life. I know I'm vain and I know I'm very confident in myself. I just don't think I am that egotistical. Almost. I'm almost that egotistical, but I also don't think I'm quite there yet. And somebody is writing a book probably on everything happening with the A's. So that's already taken, but I mean, maybe, cause but I also just like a lot of things are off the record and I don't want to like ruin bro code and like just people that's crappy. Just like, you're going to be a New York Times bestseller just to be like a butthead in the process. I don't like that. So I think those are probably the main things, but I'm definitely well on my way. I want to do a little bit of everything and I don't really know what that is, the ultimate goal and stuff, but I also want to do it while being a wife and a mom at the end of the day, which is like a huge, you know, thing for me. I'm not on my way to doing any of those things quite yet, but I want to be able to be like the five tool player while still being like a family woman, you know?
Yeah. One other question that I just thought of, as somebody who loves baseball, works in baseball, consumes baseball, what is your assessment of Christopher Mad Dog Russo? I'm curious how people view him, because I know like I have a very biased view growing up in New York and being absolutely obsessed with WFAN. But now there are baseball fans who only know him from High Heat, and there are sports fans who only know him from First Take. So I'm just kind of curious if you have thoughts on Chris Russo, like how somebody from a different part of the country, when they see him, what do they think of his personality and style?
I appreciate Alana Rizzo holding her own when she has to go on with him. Not gonna lie, I definitely change the channel when it's High Heat time. But I also genuinely,
I think that's fine. Everybody has their preferences.
But I also understand where, like, he's on the East Coast. It's like, that's like the ranting. You need that in sports for some gosh awful reason, and I understand it. But I appreciate Joey Votto going off on him recently.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
No, just because like I know I'm biased with it. I'm a big fan of Chris Russo from listening to him on WFAN when I did that. But I totally, like, when he joined First Take, I was like, this isn't gonna work. Like, people around the country, and I know he has a national radio show, but his SiriusXM radio show is still largely built off of his New York and East Coast.
You know what?
Base.
I think he's really good for old school baseball fans.
Yeah.
He's not my cup of tea.
Yeah, no,
I'm probably not his cup of tea, and that's fine
right.
too.
Yeah, his Shohei Ohtani takes that definitely they feed in older fan base of
totally. I just remember one time Skip Bayless, I think Steph Curry only scored, I think he had 29 points that game, which okay. Skip goes, he wasn't playing like an MVP. And I was like, okay, now I know this is all a lie, because Steph was assisting like crazy that day. I was like, that's what an MVP does. He lets other people win. Like it was just like one of those things where I'm like, now it just feels like I'm watching a episode of The Real Housewives, you know, like it's too.
Well, yeah. Skip Bayless is another level. Skip Bayless, even there was LeBron James hit a buzzer beater three a couple years ago to win the game for the Lakers. And Skip's response was that he only took that shot because he was afraid to drive to the basket. Like that was his criticism of LeBron. And it was his legitimate, like he thought he had this real legitimate criticism of LeBron, who just hit a buzzer beater three to win the game.
So if I say that Hogan Harris isn't taking accountability, I'm fine. Because at least, you know, or just a small little thing. And not to mention, I eventually talked to him, but it's just like, there's certain things I'm like, Lisa didn't say that.
Yeah, no, definitely fine. Jess, you were great. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
That is Jessica Kleinschmidt. I'm Brandon Contis. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to this podcast. Please also subscribe to Awful Announcing's YouTube page. But regardless of how you consume Awful Announcing and the Awful Announcing Podcast, thanks for listening and be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com. And follow us at Awful Announcing.